This is Bronco Tuesday, taking a look at Boise State Athletics with coaches and players. Now here's Bob Beeler, Chris Walton, and Paul Jay on the home of the Broncos, 670 KBOI.
All right, it's 8:38. Special guest in studio this morning, along with Bob Beeler, of course, assistant athletic director, one of six assistant athletic directors. Matt Thomas is here, along with Mike Sharp, the public relations director of the Idaho Food Bank. Now, the annual Hunger Bowl is coming up this, when is it, next?
It's the BYU game, October
BYU
the 20th.
Game on a Thursday night, October 20th. This means a lot to the food bank, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. This is a time where traditionally we receive just loads and loads of food. But we actually, we've changed it up quite a bit this year. We've kind of put a different spin on it to try to help people. You know, you have a Thursday night game. A lot of people are going there after after they get off work. They don't necessarily have time to go home and get that bag of food that maybe they built up in their cupboard. So what we're doing is, from now until October 20th, we're actually enabling people to text to donate and just give during this month to help the effort to solve hunger.
And Matt, people, though, can still bring food on the 20th, and how does that work at the game?
Yeah, that's correct. We'll have bins located all throughout the entrances leading into the stadium for that October 20th game against BYU. So you still can bring your non-perishable food items to the game that day. Obviously, the game's at 8:15, so there's a little bit of time between the end of the workday and the start of the game, but that is also an opportunity to donate to these three great organizations.
Will there also be an opportunity for a place, maybe if someone wants to leave a check or if somebody has some cash that they want to donate as well?
Yeah, we'll have a location for the Hunger Bowl in the Ford Fan Zone, which is the plaza just outside the Hall of Fame at the BYU game. We'll have staff there from all three organizations, the Idaho Food Bank, Boise Rescue Mission, and
the Salvation Army.
Yeah. Thank you. And I think it'll be a great opportunity to also raise funds, but also collect those donations that we so generously accept on behalf of those organizations.
I saw a statistic, Mike, that said almost 250,000 Idahoans don't know where their next meal's coming from.
Yeah, it's a big number, isn't it?
240,000.
Yeah, and we say, you know, 83,000 kids, which we calculate out to about 5 in every 25-kid classroom, which is just monstrous when you think about it. The need has definitely diminished a little bit over the last few years. The economy's getting better. With all these organizations working together, and these are three very powerful and strong organizations, we're still not reaching the people who need help. And so we rely in Idaho on the generosity and the graciousness of the community that we rely in or that we live in. And so having this opportunity for people to help however they see fit. In years past, people were kind of stuck just being able to donate food on that day. Now people can donate however they want to. However, maybe your cupboard is filled with food that you're not going to eat, donate that food. But if you're on that day and you're trying to figure out a way to give, don't run to the store and purchase the food. Because of our buying power, we can do that for you, and we can provide four meals for every dollar.
Yeah, which is better than the average home opener.
Oh, for sure. If you're going to the store, you're not going to be able to get that.
Yeah. That's great.
Mike, what do you want people to know about the Idaho Food Bank? What might somebody like myself that's in the community that kind of has a general idea about what the Idaho Food Bank does, explain a little bit more?
I think the biggest misconception, you hear the Idaho Food Bank and you think of maybe like a church pantry. And while that is a small part of what we do, there's just a whole lot more work that's going on behind the scenes. We serve about 163,000 people every month. We have 230 partners around the state. So if you're donating, if you're giving food, it's going everywhere. It's serving people in communities maybe you haven't even been to. And that's just a really cool thing. If you go and you take the opportunity to volunteer or see our warehouse or see the work that's being done, it might blow your mind a little bit to see how many people are in need and how many people and volunteers it takes to get that work done.
All right. So that's the Hunger Bowl. On the 20th, that's a Thursday night against BYU, and basically you can lead right up to the Hunger Bowl and make your contributions at previous games, prior games, or send monetary contributions to Boise State.
Yeah, you can go to you can text the word touchdown to 41444, or you could also go to hungerbowl.org, and that's another way to give. And Matt, you wanted to mention about an event coming up on the 15th. The homecoming game with Colorado State, big presentation at halftime.
Yeah, what a great opportunity for us to recognize the 10th anniversary of the first Fiesta Bowl victory, the 06 team that went 13-0. Really excited to have about 40-plus guys from that team come back. We're excited to have the opportunity to recognize those individuals for their accomplishments and all they've done for our athletics program and the Boise State community. So it's going to be really, really exciting. Colorado State, October 15th at 8:15. And we're just really looking forward to having those guys back and celebrating with
them.
Sounds
like you got a great turnout. If you got over 40 people coming, that's a huge turnout. That's about half the team.
Yeah, for sure. Really excited about that. Bart Hendricks on our staff has been doing a great job reaching out to those individuals. Former quarterback, really excited about that. And Bart has just been doing a great job keeping up with those guys.
All right. Matt Thomas, Mike Sharp, thanks for being with us, and good luck with the Hunger Bowl.
Thank you.
All right. It's 8:44. All right. We are back. Head tennis coach Greg Patton joins us for the second segment. Gregory, good morning.
Good morning, you guys. So excited. Football season. Saw the Neil Young concert the other night.
Boy, you couldn't
last
get in.
Night. But that's, I mean, you can't beat it. Can't beat it.
It's great.
Football game coming up.
And you've got the Dar Walters Fall Classic coming up this weekend. How many teams are in it, and can you win? Can you be rude hosts and win?
Yes. Well, we're not that rude, but we can be. Our number one guy, Kyle Butters, is a real deal. I mean, they should make a butter out of him. So we have 15 schools coming, folks, this weekend on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Appleton Tennis Center. Also play at Julia Davis and some matches over at the Bubbles. The thing that's so great, we have over 100 players. In the last few years, we've been getting 8 or 9 schools. Now we have 15. And what's happened is that, and this is what I really like, is a lot of coaches are passing the word that it's a great tournament. It's a great fall tournament. It's a great place. It's a great time to be in Boise. So, dang it, it's kind of like, you know, I first was, you know, singing songs on my old ukulele in a smoky bar, and now you know I'm at the outdoors theater, and next thing you know, we're going to be in Taco Bell Arena, and after that, it's the stadium with a concert with, like, the boss, Bruce Springsteen himself. So things are getting better, so I'm exuberant about what's going on with the team, and the teams are going to be great. We have BYU, Utah, Oregon, a lot of the big sky schools are coming, Utah State, Nevada, lots of the Mountain West schools are bringing, like, 6 to 8 players. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be playing Kyle, who played number 4 for us last year. He was the freshman of the year in the region, his freshman of the year in the conference, and was nominated for freshman of the year in the whole entire college system. He played 3 and 4 for us, and his record is like out of the world. He's on a track right now to maybe break the most wins at Boise State. And but my team is the nuclear youth.
Yeah, I was going to say, you guys are young.
Yeah, you know, I bought a bunch of coloring books when the guys all came by because it was like, all we have is freshmen and sophomores. And, you know, I'm on that cycle that, to be honest with you, I'm so excited because I'm on a cycle with this team, with the team that I had when we were number 2 in the nation at UC Irvine and when I was number 2 in the nation in Division I here at Boise State. And I want to get back to those years, and I'm on a recruiting scale now like that, which is I have a lot of talent. They're freshmen and sophomores, and we're good. You know, we're young. We're not that experienced at the level that we play at, but that's okay. I can get that done. You know what happens is in college tennis at the level we play, you know, we play SEC schools, we play ACC schools, we play Pac-10. You know, our schedule is basically lights out tough. It is a gauntlet. But it's a growing experience. And with the guys this year, I'm just going to throw them into the fire, throw them into the mud, get dirty, get burnt, but survive. And whatever happens this year is great. But, man, watch out in the next few years. And I'm planning on staying a long time. You know, I'm not, you know, I just get younger every year. I'm getting more immature. That's one thing I figured out. But you should see me dancing last night.
Uh-oh, and Neil Young.
Neil Young said, sang Old Man, and he wasn't singing about me. The song I liked was Rockin' the Free World.
Yep.
I was rockin' the free, hey, hey, my, my. Rock and roll is never going to die. I'm going to make sure that we're pounding over at Boise State on the tennis courts.
Greg, you mentioned that Kyle Butters is the most experienced returning player for you, and he was in 3 or 4, and you expect him to play 1 this year.
Yeah.
What's the biggest difference when you go to 1?
You know, the quality of players, it's like playing at, like, you know, well, like my son played Futures and Challengers this last 2 years on the pro circuit. It's like all of a sudden going from that level with the top, you know, players between, you know, 200 to 500 in the world. And when you play number one, it is similar to playing a slam. It's like playing, you know, the second or third round, you're playing guys in the top 10 in the world, like a Nadal or that. So I'm not saying the quality of tennis in college tennis there, but there's guys every year at the top that are moving on. We play, he'll get a chance to butt heads with probably 15 guys that are ranked in the top 50 in the country. Mm-hmm. So he has a great opportunity to get it, and he's getting better. I mean, the guy's smooth, but he's got salt, too. He's a smooth butter. You put him on any type of bread, man, and it's gonna be tasty. I mean, he knows how to play. He's really gifted. He's a 6'4 Kiwi, and he's got a great backhand, and he's really mentally, he's tough. He's kind of like Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, in some of those in those movies. What was the ones where he had to come back from?
Terminator.
The Terminator.
Terminator.
He's he's so funny. He's the funniest kid, too. I mean, he's low-keyed, so we bounce off each other because I'm pretty outspoken and kind of really energetic, and he's really quiet. I always call him the quirky one. I have another Kiwi, too. Who was one of the top players from New Zealand. He transferred from Tennessee, really wanted to come here, so we brought him, and he did really well at the Battle in the Bay.
In the Consolation Championship.
And that, you know, the thing that
Jack Heslin. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Cal Poly, those punks, they hired my son, and he is the assistant coach at Cal Poly. He took the Cal Poly team there, and they got lost in the finals of singles, won the doubles, and they beat my guy in the consolation. These are the top teams in the Western United States, and he's only coached. This is his first time he coached a college team, and he just kicked butt. And I looked at him, and I said, you punk, I've been trying to do that. When I was 23, it took me 4 years to get, you know, to get really rocking the free world. And he's doing it the first time.
All right, we are out of time. Greg, good luck this weekend at the Dar Walters, and we'll be following you throughout the year.
Come out, folks. Come out and watch us. It's free. It's going to be a beautiful weekend. Come out and see the Broncos play tennis. I'm telling you, it's just like watching a reggae concert. Bob Marley and the Wailers.
It's 8:53. All right, we are back. Got about a minute left. Bob Beeler remains, and you got a busy week, busy couple of days coming up.
Yeah, and of course the game's on Friday this week, so don't forget that. Kickoff 7 o'clock in Albuquerque. Boise State trying to win for the second week in a row against somebody that beat them last year. New Mexico won 31-24 last season. Boise State trying to turn the favor, and our coverage here on KBOI will begin at 2 on Friday. We'll get you ready on Thursday night at 7 for Coach Harsin Weekly. Our guests will be Stephen Baggett, who had to make the surprise start at center.
Sweet.
Elliot Hoyt, who is the defensive tackle from England. And our assistant coach guest will be Steve Caldwell to talk about defensive line.
All right. You get some age coming in there. That's good stuff.
It'll give us a chance to hear our accents. Steve Caldwell with a southern accent, Elliot Hoyt with the British accent.
Now, if the Broncos win, are going to take a picture of themselves on the field?
Probably, you know, to be honest with you, it was probably the best win ever in New Mexico history, or certainly in a long, long time.
And maybe Utah State, too. Got one down, 3 to go. In revenge, October. Well, only 2 more in October.
Thanks, Bob.
It's 8:56, Idaho Talks Live, coming up after a news break at the top of the hour.
We're talking about it.
It's always about the money. Everything else is just conversation.
We're talking about it.
No excuses. Just find a way to get it done.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Chris Walton and Paul J. Schneider on the News and Talk of Idaho. 670 KBOI.
KBOI News Time 9:06. Paul J. and Chris. Oh, I tell you what.
Hello.
Kim Kardashian robbed of $10 million.
In jewelry.
In jewelry, which she had on her, apparently. Charm life of Kim Kardashian took a disastrous turn late Sunday. Now, when I first heard this, mm-hmm. what did I tell you? Said she's doing it.
As a publicity stunt.
No. I didn't say that at all. Said she's doing it for the insurance.
Oh, okay. That's right. That is what you said.
And you said, well, they have all the money in the world anyway.
Yeah, well, she's married to Kanye West, and he's rich, and all the Kardashians are wealthy.
Uh-huh.
Mostly just for being Kardashians.
She said, I was a little bit off, I think. Looks like now she's going to sue the hotel.
Oh, because she was in her room when this happened.
Yeah.
So the hotel has terrible security.
She was tied up, threatened with a gun, robbed of an estimated $10 million in jewelry by armed and masked assailants in Paris.
How interesting is that? That
she was attending Paris Fashion Week.
Yeah, well, okay. Paris Fashion Week. You have to be, you know, pretty dolled up to go to that. But can you imagine going on vacation and taking $10 million worth of anything with you?
No. Well, the only reason I would is so I didn't have to leave it by itself.
Well, good point.
The news rocketed around the world yesterday, sending Twitter into a horrified swoon. And her husband, Kanye West, rushing from a stage in the middle of the concert in New York to deal with what he called a family emergency.
Well, yeah.
And I'm not making fun of that.
No,
I mean, if my wife was robbed at gunpoint and I was on the air, I'd say, Chris, I got to go.
Even if she was in Paris at the time?
Well, that may make it more attractive, actually.
Oh, okay. Well,
so here's what...
If you want me to, I will make fun of that just slightly.
A source familiar with the situation...
I could do it now if you want.
Okay.
It was the only way he could make it about him.
Yeah. Sad, but...
Couldn't play another half hour and then go to Paris. He just had to leave right during the concert that people had paid to see.
And he canceled two others as well. A source familiar with the situation, but unauthorized to speak publicly, one of those guys, said in a statement, two armed men dressed up as police officers and wearing masks.
Kate, why would you
excuse
need to,
me?
Why would you need to do both of those things?
Yeah. Entered her hotel room and held her up. The incident left the reality TV star badly shaken but physically unharmed.
I mean, if you have a mask, you could be dressed any way you want, and nobody would probably, I mean, you know, put the mask on before you go in the room so she can't identify your face. Well, maybe that was the whole thing. Maybe that they got up to her room by being dressed as police officers and then put on the masks.
Yeah.
So they couldn't be identified except for the guys wearing the police uniforms.
She left Paris Monday morning, a few hours.
A whole bunch of jewelry.
After the incident, and flew to Teterboro Airport in New Jersey. From there, she traveled in a motorcade to her apartment building in downtown Manhattan, where there was a heavy security presence, according to the Associated Press.
Yeah, which was unnecessary because the robbery already happened and in a different country.
Her two kids, North and Saint, were not with the Kardashians at the time, according to People magazine. Five assailants, listen to this, The five assailants escaped on bicycles. And are still at large. They stole a jewelry box containing nearly $7 million worth of jewelry, as well as a ring worth $4.5 million. So we're talking $11.5 million. On Tuesday, today, Parisian police told the Associated Press they were studying surveillance camera footage in an effort to identify the thieves who wore fake police emblems on their jackets.
Okay.
The investigation will be led by French police Brigade de Repression, by the BRB.
Or as we call him,
Emmanuel Lachaussée, a spokeswoman for the French embassy in Washington, described the investigators as high level.
So they're supposed to be good at it.
And they think it might be not clowns, but the Pink Panther gang.
Really?
Because the BRB is involved in investigating the Pink Panthers' gang of
now,
jewel thieves.
Are they the ones that they basically like eight of them at the same time crash into a jewelry store, smash everything, and go, and they're gone in 30 seconds?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I think I've seen them on television.
Yeah, like yesterday. They're considered the largest, most successful gang of jewel thieves in the world, according to a 2014 report on CBS's 60 Minutes.
With the possible exception of somebody you haven't heard of at all.
Yeah. Yeah, those are the good ones.
Right.
370 heists worth $500 million.
Actually, that's a lot.
Mm-hmm. Elements of the Kardashian robbery similar to the MO of the Panthers, who got their nickname from British tabloids.
Just out of curiosity.
After a robbery way back in 2003.
Just out of curiosity, though, once you've stolen $500,000 or $500 million
worth
of stuff.
Why do you need more?
Why would you continue?
Rush.
Because,
adrenaline rush.
Well, okay, adrenaline rush, things like that. But you could also get caught and go to prison, whereas if you just sit back with your winnings, it's less likely to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And by winnings, I mean spoils or, well, the stuff you stole.
How did the thieves know Kardashian was there by herself?
Ah, inside job.
With jewelry. How did they know that? Well, because she often advertises where she is and shows off her bottles
on
social media.
Yeah, and her jewelry.
In recent days, she posted a picture of a huge ring on Twitter and on Instagram. Joanna Primevert, chief spokeswoman for the Paris Police Department, said Kardashian's social media profile, she has more than 48 million followers on Twitter, did her no favors.
So they've narrowed it down to that many people who could have known about this.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah, they're basically saying...
Yeah, it's her own fault.
Yeah.
Well, that would be like going on vacation and then writing on, you know, Twitter or Facebook that you can't believe you forgot to leave anybody watching the house.
Yeah.
I think I even left the door open and cash.
All right, let me show you this picture.
All right.
I know nobody can see it.
Well,
okay, this is a picture of the ring, which is big, right?
Yeah.
Want to see the rest of the picture?
Okay. Yeah, there's her baubles.
KBOI News Time, 9:14. This was going out to Kim Kardashian this morning, recovering at Teterboro Airport, New Jersey.
No, she went home.
After a weekend, she did go home. That's too bad. Nobody should be robbed at gunpoint. Can't imagine anything scarier.
It's the easiest way to get them to give up the cash, though.
Yeah.
Oh, but you're right.
Where is it? Here, take it.
It shouldn't happen.
No.
I'm just saying if you're an actual robber, it's probably a good strategy.
See what Bill Clinton said today?
Oh, what did he say? He
said Obamacare is not working?
Yeah. I was going to say something somewhat uncharacteristic.
Yeah. Obamacare has survived dozens of Republican attempts to repeal and undermine it. But now who's complaining? The Democrats. Led most recently by former President Bill Clinton.
The spouse of the current Democrat running for
president.
President, who of course has been endorsed by Barack Obama.
Yeah. About the cost crush facing consumers, posing a fresh challenge. And the crush is coming because of the increase in fees for the coming year. All right, let's go to the phone. And Barbara of Boise might want to talk about Kardashian. Barbara, good morning. Barbara, good night.
I think Barbara's gone.
Yeah, she's gone because we kind of changed subjects here.
Our word of the day.
Oh, yeah. KBOI rewards code. Ring, as in $4.5 million ring.
Yeah.
Like Kim.
Or telephone ring.
Yeah. Ring. R-I-N-G.
Ring around the collar.
Go to 670KBOI.com.
You try scrubbing it out. You try washing it out.
Nobody knows what that is anymore.
Well, I know.
Because
it's whisk.
You know why?
Because they wash their necks now.
Well, because they don't use like Brill cream and that kind of
stuff.
Well,
yeah, that's a good point.
That's what got you. You know, it was hair tonic.
Well, yeah.
Maybe they do. I don't know. Maybe they still have rings around the collar. I don't know.
Well, I'm sure somebody does.
Yeah. Bill Clinton on the campaign trail for Hillary told voters in Michigan yesterday that the legislation has created a crazy system, a system where millions more people have health care, but those unable to qualify for subsidies are getting, as he put it, killed. The people out there busting it, sometimes 60 hours a week, wind up with their premiums doubled and their coverage cut in half, Clinton said. It's the craziest thing in the world. What do you think about that?
Well, I think he's right, because everything the government does has a benefit to somebody and
eats somebody else.
Exactly. And that's just the way it works. It's got to work that way, because in this day and age, almost everything the government does is just a matter of transferring money from some people to other people.
That's true.
And this is no different than that. And it's going to benefit certain people, but it's also going to hurt others. And quite often, in this particular case, it's been the people right in the middle who really don't need to be dropped any lower.
Yeah. Well, it's like us. Our insurance didn't really, or mine, I don't know about your, I don't know if we're different, but I think we're the same.
Mine's easy to explain, really.
Yeah?
Yeah, it became more expensive and covered less stuff.
All right. I guess I don't need to outline mine
Okay. It's similar.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Very, very similar. Comments come as Republican and Democratic administrations at the state level grapple with fresh complications from the law as insurers threaten to leave the Obamacare exchanges amid financial concerns, and customers face the prospect of rising premiums once again. They keep rising.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Clinton's, gee, I'm starting to agree with Bill Clinton. That's weird.
Yeah. Clinton's comments in Michigan follow officials in nearby Minnesota recently agreeing to huge price hikes in order to convince insurers to stay. So they're pandering to the insurance companies.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me either, I guess.
Yeah. Commerce Commissioner Mike Rothman announced Friday individual market plans could raise rates. Give me a percentage how much rates are going to raise next year in this guy's estimation.
1%? Was that too optimistic?
That was too low.
2%?
Way too low.
3%?
Higher.
How much higher? Like a lot?
He says 16. That's not right. That is way low. 67%.
67%. Okay.
67%.
So two-thirds higher.
This year's hike, depending on where you were, in Michigan, Minnesota.
So for every $100 you were paying, add another $67 to that.
Yeah.
Oh, goody.
And that follows the jump of this year, which was 14 to 49%.
I think we'll be able to budget just great if we stop eating for a year.
In a written statement, Rothman, who serves in a Democratic administration, says middle-class residents are getting crushed and called for urgent reforms in the state's individual market. Crushed. 67% by one estimate. That's a lot.
Yeah.
KBOI News Time, 9:26. KBOI News Time, 9:27. Let's go to the phones. If I can get them to answer. Gary of Emmett. Gary, good morning.
Good morning, Paul. Good morning, Chris.
Hey, Gary.
Hey, you know, this is interesting because you're talking about how much it costs a consumer with the increases in Obamacare.
Yeah.
And there is another party that is paying a whole lot of money per employee.
True.
And this business expense is going up at such a rate. It's another push toward either economy of scale stores and different things like that getting bigger and smaller ones falling by the wayside because a small business cannot afford to provide the benefits for employees the big business can, or the ultimate, which is mechanization or robots taking over.
And or part-time honestly, workers.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Who don't
robot
qualify.
Doesn't have sick days and doesn't need Obamacare. And, you know, I think the days of tellers in banks, servers at restaurants that are fast food types, and things like that, those less skill-based jobs, in fact, even skill-based jobs, many of them, where the work is repetitive, boring, or dangerous, are going to be replaced pretty much by robots.
Well, give me a time frame.
You know, the time frame is probably in 10, 15 years, but the pressure to accelerate that time frame is being done by the economic stress put on business. It's all a matter of money. You know, if, for instance, and I expect that there's a really good chance Trump will win, and I would rather that than the alternative, the fact of him closing the border is going to make more pressure on the farm worker market because there will be less bodies per job and the wages will go up. Well, when the wages go up high enough, it will be in the best interest of the farmers to mechanize, you know, different parts of the operation.
And they'll just pass it on to us, Gary, and a salad will cost $15.
Well, the fact is, if you can make it cheaper to put a machine in place because of the price of wages, you know, at some point, look what happened to Detroit. You know, the skill jobs, the skilled welding, even the painting of the cars became robotic. You know, those high-skilled jobs priced themselves out of the market. And if you look at Boeing and different people like that, you can see they're trimming their assembly lines where they can and putting in robots to do many of the skilled things that were formerly done by a human being.
I'll start worrying about this when we get our printer to work here. I tell you what.
Yeah,
we
first,
bought a printer.
First things first.
Which is as big as a car, Gary. It's as big as a damn car, and you can't make a copy on that thing.
Yeah, but they make a printer as small as a notebook computer that works wonderfully and all the time. And by the way, talking about printers,
but you have to keep loading paper in that sucker.
They make a printer right now that you can send a plan from New York City to Boise, and it will build an object called a 3D printer.
Yeah.
You know, so...
Yeah, Chris and I actually went and saw...
Yeah, we saw one of those several years ago.
We saw one at Boise State.
We saw one of the really early ones. They had one in a lab over at Boise State, and we went over and took a tour.
And
it was great. What I wondered, though, is, and I think most people don't seem to think about this for some reason, is a 3D printer can only print what's on the outside. You know, yes. Like, for instance, if you have a box and, like, say that you want it to make a box, it can make a box, but it can't duplicate what's inside the box.
No. Uh-huh. And, you know, they talk about them. Well, yeah, they can duplicate what's inside the box.
Well, one thing at a time, but.
Actually,
you can't.
No, I think they can do the whole thing.
They make very complicated things.
Yeah. Because they're making like organs for kind of play, but organs for people.
Right.
So in
you
fact,
have to. I think there is some assembly required.
Maybe. Not an expert. All right. Thanks, Gary.
You bet.
Gary's afraid robots are taking. There's too much to be afraid of. Let's go to Scotty in Middleton. Scotty, good morning.
Good morning. I don't know if you were watching the our debate yesterday on the television, but about 2 o'clock, the time where she was speaking from, she picked up something from her desk. It looked like a pill and popped it into her mouth.
Who are you talking about?
I beg your pardon?
Who are you talking about?
Hillary Clinton.
There was a debate with Hillary Clinton yesterday?
Well, yeah, but she was given one of her talks, one of her speeches.
An appearance.
It was about 2 o'clock, the time where she was calling, where she was speaking from, and she popped something into her mouth. It was done that quick. I just happened to be looking at the time, and it seemed to be a kind of brown thing. And my mind flashed back to when the time that she took one of her coughing spasms, and she coughed out a kind of brownie, kind of green thing into her tumbler. And I was just wondering, you know, hey, if anybody else seen it.
No, I didn't see it.
No, it was done that quick.
Could have been an Altoid.
I don't know what it was, but I'll tell you, sir, it was done really quick.
Wow.
And another thing that made me laugh with her, when she said that she made every time that their tax returns, she handed them in, she did not, during the cattle gate, she didn't disclose her tax returns. And later on, that we found out why, because she was in league with a guy called Blair, a real good Scottish name, and he worked for a chicken producer place, and Bill gave them a special that they didn't need to inspect their where they were doing the animals, and you know,
a pass, in other words, yeah.
Yeah, well, it was later on that they found out that they were the only company that it wasn't inspected.
Oh. Yeah.
So anyway, gentlemen, if you look at the video, it's about 2 o'clock into your speech, and you'll see the kind of quick way she threw it into her mouth.
All right, good stuff, Scotty. Thanks. I thought we were talking about Obamacare. How do we get off on that?
Mm.
All right, back to Obamacare.
Well, they're both Democrats.
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just.
Other than
well,
that,
at least robotics had something to do with the high cost.
That's a good point, too.
Yeah. The need for reform is now, without any doubt, more serious and urgent. Rothman said he's in the Democratic administration. He called the soaring rates unsustainable, yeah, and unfair, yeah, while saying the steps they took were necessary to avert a collapse this year. After, we're talking about Minnesota now, after the state's largest health insurer, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota, said it would stop selling health plans to individuals and families next year. Other insurers said they were going to follow. So if insurance rates go up and nobody's selling insurance, what's a boy supposed to do?
And good
what
question.
Do you do?
Be careful.
Yeah, don't get hurt. Get sick.
Wear a mask.
But then if you don't have it, they fine you, right?
Yeah. The IRS is in charge of that right now.
The insurance giant Blue Cross Blue Shield said extraordinary financial losses drove its decision. The company said it was projecting a total loss of more than $500 million in the individual health plan segment over 3 years. That's not sustainable either.
No, probably not.
Many states are facing similar challenges. Employer markets are fairly stable, but the individual insurance market does not feel stable at all, says Janet Troutwine, chief executive of the National Association of Health Underwriters. She said this in a story in the New York Times and was quoted as saying, in many states, the individual market is in shambles. It's kind of the way they do stuff. I've had some health issues over the past 4 or 5 years, and they routinely send you from doctor to doctor to test, and, you don't know how much anything's going to cost.
Yeah, you find out later.
You find out later and later and later. And
because nobody tells you that. Nobody says, you have the option of having an MRI. I'm going to send you over for one. But by the way, they're about $2,500 or something like that. You know,
yeah.
Nobody says that.
Nobody says that.
Here's your option. They just, if you've got insurance.
We've got to send you downstairs.
The sky is the limit.
Yeah, exactly. And things like that are driving the cost of getting whatever straight up in the air.
Exactly right.
We're way late for a break. It's 9:47. All right. We're back. Phone lines are jammed. Let's get to it. Hank of Boise. Hank, good morning.
Good morning. Real quickly, the Scotty's point was Tyson chicken. And to get to my main point on the thing, basically Obamacare was designed to basically wean people off of their private insurers. And basically the goal in the end is to expand Medicaid and turn it into a single payer thing, much like the general health insurance bureaucracy in Great Britain, but make Medicaid the instrument of that, Obamacare was designed to fail. It was.
Well, then it's working.
That's exactly it. It's working on cue. As far as Obama's concerned, this is a great success.
All right. Thanks, Hank. Let's go to Terry of Cary. Terry.
Yes. And as far as certain people I talk to, this is linked to cost in a sense. I feel, in fact, because I've known of about a handful of people in the last half dozen years in Blaine County to commit suicide because we don't have the choice of euthanasia. And to me, that has to do with separation of church and state, of which I'm very tolerant of other people's religions. But when they dictate to me and others I've talked to about, you know, not having that choice, it kind of irks me, and it is linked to great costs of keeping people alive that have no quality of life anymore.
All right. Good stuff. Thank you. I guess suicide's a form of euthanasia, right?
Well, it is. I mean, that's euthanasia is simply letting someone die or something, like a dog or a cat or something, you know, die rather than suffer.
Yeah. Let's go to John of Boise. John.
How are you today?
Good. Got about a minute.
All right. Well, maybe we should get more of those bills and just sign them so we can see what's in them.
Good plan.
I would, but I can't afford an ink pen.
Well, all we need is one more. I mean, let's go after the auto insurance industry or something.
Well, I mean, there are plenty of bills. If you were in Congress, you could vote for them without reading them. You're free to do that.
Right, but what I was getting at is that this is where their feet should be held to the fire, and they're looking the other way. So it's proof that those that believe that it is a left-leaning media is very blatant. Otherwise, they should be calling it out. 27 states have lost insurance coverage of some type.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a good story. Good story in USA Today. That's where I'm getting some of my facts this morning on Clinton's comments on the fact that Medicaid is failing.
We're just about out of time. I wanted to read this quickly. Wayne, Wayne of Cheney says, in response to the call about replacing humans with automation, I'm a machine designer. My job is to design and build machines to replace humans. It's not 20 years down the road. It's now. The upswing in activity to automate tasks has increased exponentially over the last 5 years. Good for me, bad for those that don't prepare themselves.
Something to think about with Mike Rogers coming up next, brought to you by Boise Church of Christ, where church is family. Check them out on the World Wide Web at boisechurch.org or stop by Sundays, 2000 North El Dorado at 10:30. We'll see you tomorrow.
Now, something to think about with Mike Rogers.
Voters in two more countries rebel against the elites. Voters in the Philippines elected a tough-talking populist to put an end to the drug cartel's grip there. Voters in the United Kingdom sent thanks but no thanks to the European Union in the Brexit vote. Here in the United States, Donald Trump won the Republican primary. Now this past week, there's been two more voter uprisings. In Hungary, a question was put to voters whether or not to accept more refugees. Through the vote was something of a political ploy by the prime minister. The results were overwhelming. More than 90% of the voters said no. In Colombia, the leftist government negotiated an amnesty deal with a Marxist terrorist organization called the FARC. The FARC has killed more than 200,000 Colombians in the past 55 years. Colombia's politicians may have forgiven and forgotten, but it turns out the people didn't. Wonder if the world's ruling class will start to notice that good old-fashioned common sense is beaten fancy speechifying more and more. Something to think about. I'm Mike Rogers.